Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Synapse, Think Tank of the Air, featuring influencers, creatives, and top leaders in the Twin Cities. And now, here is our host, Steve LeBall.
And welcome to another edition of Synapse, Think Tank of the Air. I'm your host, Steve LeBeau, and we have three very bright and charming and knowledgeable guests today. And starting with the one I know the most is Amanda Brickman. And she's, well, you're like a superstar. You're on TV. I think you've been doing public speaking lately.
I do. I enjoy public speaking. It's fun.
Well, I mean, you know, you're just a superstar, and your show is on Hulu, is that right?
That's right, and this year it's actually coming to Prime as well, so Amazon Prime Video. So we're excited about that. More hustle.
And so that's, you're with Deluxe, and the show is called, Start the Revolution Without Me.
Okay, so it's Small Business Revolution Main Street.
That's right.
So each season we revitalize a different small town's Main Street, and we do it through its small businesses. And Deluxe is one of our core business areas, is working with small businesses. And so this is our way that we reach small businesses versus advertising. Rather than advertising at them, we're walking alongside them and truly helping them and have a brand as a publisher platform versus just advertising. So
I watched one of your episodes today so I could be, you know, up to snuff, and it was a lot of fun. And then we have another person here involved in the video world. That's Kelsey Lindell.
Yeah.
Lindell.
Yeah, it's okay.
Not like this street.
No, not Lindale. I get that a lot.
And I suppose here in Minnesota, but it's still, is it a Scandinavian name?
Probably. I'm like a giant mutt of all boring European, like,
oh, really?
And all that. Yeah.
Well, I did my DNA.
You're quite pretty for a mutt.
Mutts can be pretty, but thank you. I know. I get asked all the time if I'm what's your ethnicity? I'm like, I'm really boring. Like, I'm not exotic. I promise. I just dark hair.
Well, it's you know, it might be a mutt, but, you know, it's the mixture, you know, it's like a chemistry alchemy or something. Mm-hmm. So I did my DNA and I found out that I'm basically a white European, but there's this little 0.5% of African stuff.
Great.
And I found out I have as much Nigerian as Elizabeth Warren has Cherokee.
Wow.
Which is like hardly any.
Right.
So, anyway.
But it's there.
It's there. I mean, yeah, it's more conceptual than physical, but, you know.
Right.
Anyway, and we're also here with Nicole Anthony, who's in transition. You're doing things.
I am in transition, yep. I just recently sold one of my businesses. I had a boutique marketing company, and now I just started a consulting firm called Disrupt, and we've been going in and helping companies who are scaling hone in on their constraints, and I piece together a team, and we remove them and get out of there so they can continue to scale and keep growing their teams and move on to the next.
So you disrupt the scalers and then get out of the way.
I disrupt the constraints.
The constraints.
Broken processes that are in place that are holding companies back from scaling.
Well, that sounds like what you do, Amanda.
Well, I was just going to say, you sound like a serial entrepreneur, though. I love that. Like, I just sold my company, and I've already started another one. I love that.
But well, what are you going to do, you know?
No time to waste. I've been in real estate, and, I love being an entrepreneur. It's my favorite thing in the whole world.
So, and then you're not only an entrepreneur, but you're kind of like a guardian of a multitude of entrepreneurs of the female persuasion.
Well, that's very kind. I don't know. Mm-hmm.
Is that one way
true.
To put it?
That's a beautiful way to put it.
Yeah.
I'm trying to talk about NABO.
Oh, yeah. So
NABO. National Association of Women Business Owners.
You got it.
Of Minnesota.
That's correct. Yes, I am president-elect
Wow.
And take on full presidency next June of 2020.
God, just the power. That's when everybody's going to be president.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Perfect. Then I won't be alone.
Guys, were there 20?
Women all around.
Yes.
Were there 20 people running for your position?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Were the debates televised?
No.
I missed those. I love watching those.
You know? Okay, does Nabo have a smoke-filled room?
With cigars. Absolutely.
Okay.
And we have our little brandies. Mine's a Negroni, tequila Negroni, not brandy.
And the decision was made.
And the decision was made, yes.
Although
I wasn't in the room when the decision got made. They had to, even though I was on the board, they had to excuse me and do a vote without me.
You were volunteered.
I was volunteered by none other than Mary Nutting, the current president. Phenomenal.
That's good. I mean, I imagine all of you are on nonprofit boards. And Amanda, I know you're with, WBDC?
I'm on the WBDC board, and then I also serve on the Ordway board and the Children's Theater Company board, and then the ANA board, which is the Association of National Advertisers. It's essentially CMOs from the largest brands who work together to try and change ad laws or just defend the industry and push the industry to better places and things like that.
Okay, first, WBDC, Women's Business
Development Center, and that's out of Chicago.
Right.
Yep.
They have a one here, don't they? Or?
Well, they partner a lot with Women Venture, which is a local one. So it's so interesting. We've got NABO, we've got Women Venture, WBDC. There's so many great nonprofits playing in the space of supporting female entrepreneurs that I think it's really cool. And so they all serve a little bit of a different purpose in supporting female entrepreneurs. WBDC is a little bit more focused on access to capital and some of the training around kind of the fundamentals of the financing of a business, but certainly help with a lot of those other support mechanisms as well.
And do you get free tickets to the Children's Theater?
We don't, no. It's so interesting being on theater boards that you still are a subscriber because you're trying to still support organization. So, yeah. But we were subscribers at CTC and Ordway well before I served on either of those boards. I just think we're so blessed to be in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area with such a vibrant theater community, and especially around children's theater. I mean, CTC is really a national leader in theater for children, and we have that right here in our backyard. It's unbelievable.
We go every other month. So I have a 7-year-old, and it's one of our favorite things. The Grinch that's by far been her favorite so far.
Yeah.
So we're looking forward to the next, we have a 3 coming up or whatever, and they're, yeah.
Yeah.
That's great.
I think taking your kids to theater is such a great way to express. I mean, live theater, the play out of emotions in the room, like there's empathy learned from that. There's great admiration for the performance behind it. I mean, I think to watch kids captivated by live theater in this kind of digital age is really refreshing. I think theater has always been important to the development of kids, but specifically like more than ever now. And so we also subscribe over at Stages, which is a different experience than CTC. So Stages is a theater over in Hopkins, and usually they have more kids in their performances, and the performances are led by children, everything, even like the backstage and the sets and everything. But our daughter likes them equally. You know, there's just a different experience to both of them.
How old's your daughter?
She's 8.
Yeah. Well, it seems like children in the old days got to do more imaginative, mm-hmm. Making up their own theater and stuff. Mm-hmm. And these days, everything is programmed for you.
I think that's right. I think, I don't know. Are you guys parents? Yes. Well, you said 7. Yes. Yep. Yeah. Do you
have kids? No, I'm far away from that stage of life. I'm like parenting myself.
But
still.
Kelsey, you still have kind of a childlike innocence to yourself, right?
Well, I work with kids a lot. Like, I actually ended up just quitting my job for like a solid year and just going back to teaching preschool because I was like, I can't deal with marketing if it doesn't help people in some way. And I just felt like I was just selling fitness to everyone for a long time and then transitioned back into my job. But no, I work with kids a lot, and I work, like, I mentor kids in our neighborhood, and like I love kids. I lived overseas for 4 years working with kids. Like,
Where?
I lived in South Africa.
Wow.
Yeah.
Nice. They have kids over there.
They do. A few. A couple, yeah.
That's amazing. Okay, so I love what you just said, though, about marketing not, like, feeling like mm-hmm. you don't have the ability to access good. So that is exactly how I got into marketing. Mm-hmm. So when I was in high school, I was so drawn to marketing and film and production and just like the ad world. But I remember I was really also felt really pulled to like make the world a better place. And so I'm like, I think I need to join the Peace Corps or become a teacher or a missionary or something. Like I remember a teacher asked the standard question, what are you going to do when you grow up? And I said, well, I feel like I want to make the world a better place, but I'm so drawn to like advertising and marketing, but it seems so secular and it's not really making the world better. And I remember he said, but Amanda, if people who want to do good don't go into marketing, like how will marketing ever get better?
Right.
Look at all the evil people there.
Yeah. And it was like this light bulb moment for me that like we can, those of us who see marketing as a platform for making our companies better and using the platforms that our companies have to advocate for goodness in the world, the more of us that go into the field, the better we can from the inside out help these companies be. And so I love that you said that because I mean, that was my main objection to going into marketing. I felt like it wasn't goodness based like other fields or professions are.
Totally. I was that missionary, truly. Like I was that idiot 18-year-old who thought she was going to change the world with like no education at that point. And I was like, okay, cool. So I did Bible college over there and I was like, I'm going to save the world. And then I just realized like truly I had no skill set that could really help them on a long-term basis. But what I was really good at was telling stories about what's going on there and raising support for the organization that I was working with. And I was like, well, if I really want to make the world a better place, the best thing to do is to not be here. Like, I'm wasting my time and energy being here. I could do a lot more if I move back to the States and, like, talk about this. And so just kind of I accidentally ended up in marketing and then ended up in the fitness world. And I was like, I hate this. And now I'm back in, like, doing things that matter with Kause. So it's been a really weird journey and never in a million years planned on being in marketing. I just like talking about people and what they're up to.
Good for you, though, because, I mean, like, every cause needs all the roles. Like, you need the person doing it. You need the person fundraising it for it. You need the person operating it. You need, like, you know, I think Christians would call it the body of Christ. Like, you need, need all the roles to work in conjunction, the eyes, the ears, the heart, the muscles to do the work. And so how cool that you recognize that so early in your career. Like, I care about this cause, but it doesn't mean I have to be doing this cause to advance this cause. There are other roles to be played that are very vital to actually, you know, advocating and making change.
Yeah.
Well, it's kind of a transition in the whole field of capitalism is that they used to say, in fact, there was a guy that won a Nobel Prize in economics, and he said, the only thing that businesses should be concerned with is their profit. You know, that's their only job is to make money. And now that seems to be kind of disappearing. I know there were some books out after the big recession in 2008 when the financial industry realized that, gee, if you only go for the money, bad things can happen because then you shortcut on a lot of ethics and other things. And so I think what you're doing at Deluxe is a good idea of realizing that it's not just us. There's a whole world out there and we kind of have to take care of it.
I think you're absolutely right, though. There's so much pressure on specifically publicly traded companies, on even if your C-suite, even if your CEO, even if your employee base believes in kind of doing good, you still have this pressure from the street to turn that profit and meet these quarterly numbers, and you make short-term decisions in lieu of better long-term responsible decisions in order to kind of, you know, meet these needs. But I do think, thank you for noticing, I do think at Deluxe we're trying to, you know, obviously still deliver value for our shareholders, but alongside that, do something good for the customers that we serve. I so wholeheartedly believe that there has to be more to life than just making money and driving nice cars.
Absolutely.
Like, it has to be, and for companies too, it's like we have to exist for more than just making money. Like, as large companies, we're standing behind giant megaphones and we have access to advocacy. We have access to policies.
Absolutely.
Are the ones spending the big ad dollars. That's why I think it's so important. That's why I do things like with the ANA. It's like, as advertisers, we're the ones putting all this noise out there. And is it noise or is it advocacy for good? And you can do that alongside business success.
Well, plus what you're doing there has some imagination.
Thank you. I mean,
a lot of corporations, when they want to, you know, serve the community, they set up a foundation and give money to nonprofits. Mm-hmm. Now, since I know a lot of you involved with nonprofits, there's nothing wrong with that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a lot more creative to go on there and actually help small businesses. So I appreciate that.
Well, thank you, Steve. I mean, I recently gave a TEDx on this topic of like companies being able to do well by doing good. And in it, I literally say almost what you just said, which is, I'm not talking about philanthropy or employee volunteerism, like those are important parts that any large company should be doing. That's our responsibility as big companies. What I'm really advocating for companies to think about is don't just stop at defining your brand purpose. Like figure out what your unique brand action is and how can you put your money where your mouth is and go out and prove it. And not just by giving money away, but participating in the lives of your customers or doing something that affects their lives in a positive way beyond what you sell them. And so that is what we're trying to do through the Small Business Revolution. We could have just stopped at saying we love small businesses and everything we provide helps a small business. But what better way to prove we love them than to actually go out and help them? These are our, you know, in producing the series and in investing in these businesses across the country, these are our ad dollars. Like this isn't incremental funding. This is in lieu of advertising at small businesses that we're walking alongside them. And I just so believe all brands can find that unique brand action and then advocate, you know, for your customers in a more meaningful way.
Well, helping the brand. How many people here are involved in branding? Okay, two out of three.
Kind of are, though.
Kind of. Well, you're
Steve only got two hands. But
okay, well, tell me what branding is, each of you, Kelsey.
I just wanted to say, though, really quick before we move on, I love how you took the time to come up with a very unique approach to continue to not only relate to your current customer base, but build on it. Instead of traditional advertising, which you obviously have a ton of experience with, you know, starting the Small Business Revolution is just a totally different approach. And even since you started that, still not a lot of people are doing very unique, creative things like that. So that's something I noticed a long time ago, and I just wanted to say that it's really awesome.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate that. Thank you. I am surprised that more companies haven't kind of caught on, you know, but
me too.
I think every brand is capable of this kind of work, you know, and it's so engaging for your employees and it's great for recruitment. We have like most of our senior leaders have been recruited within the last 4 or 5 years say, I came because I saw the Small Business Revolution. Like that's not even why we're doing it, but it's such a great, you know, result. But anyway, thank you for those kind words. It's awesome.
Great. Yeah.
So Kelsey, what is branding?
Oh, man, that's a loaded question.
Well, you know, we're here talking.
Yeah. Ooh, okay. Well, I mean, within my role, so what we do at Acause is, I mean, we create brand anthems a lot of times or campaigns for different companies.
Anthems?
Yeah. So video productions, basically talking about the people that make up, whether it's the staff at a company or the clients at a company or people who have benefited from the company's good works. We tell their story. And so what we want to do is we want to figure out, like, who the brand is. That's kind of how we come into play. So we're not the people doing the colors or the copywriting. We just tell stories and we sit down with people. And
not the what, but the who?
Yeah. And a bit of the how, too, and like the why. And like, why does your service matter? How does it actually impact people's lives? And from my perspective, what a good brand strategy does is it figures out what that is, like who this company is, why they're doing what they're doing, why it matters, and they figure out how to communicate that. Like, it's all communication strategy. So I feel like the coloring and the copywriting and like the website layout and the social media strategy all kind of comes down to that, which is fun because I've done the social media stuff and I'm so glad to be out of it. Like, I've got a big social profile, but I don't care. And it's what I love doing is I love talking about like who the people are behind a company and really what makes it unique. And so at Acause, we tell those stories, which is really fun.
So you don't create a brand, you discover a brand.
Yeah, well, we help them discover themselves, and then we tell it for them. Like, we have the people that are there to ask the right questions and capture it in ways that communicates it to somebody who's never heard of them.
So people may not know their own brand.
I feel like sometimes, yeah, a lot of times that's what, like, agencies do. And we're not a branding agency like your typical one. We're not, but we work with brands to help communicate who they are. And a lot of times we come after the initial branding strategy. So sometimes brands have an idea, but they just don't know how to quite communicate that through video. They're like, oh, we need to brag about ourselves or talk about this or this or this flashy thing. And we come in and we're like, hey, that's like not a great strategy. Like, nobody likes. I mean, one thing that like I heard at one of my very first kind of PR conferences that I went to is like marketing is telling people how great you are, but then good PR, like a good communication strategy, is getting other people to tell people how great you are. And right. So like, how do you create those stories and how do you ask the questions that like get not just into the minds but really the heart of the customer? So I mean, maybe Amanda can expand a bit more on like what brand means to her in terms of like creating like the design and all of that. I mean, I don't know, you guys do everything.
I think you said it so well, though. I mean, I think whenever I started a new company, and we're trying to kind of like go through what is our brand? What is it? Like, I think a company has to ask themselves, like, what would the world be missing?
Yeah.
If we weren't in business, like, absolutely. It has to be that heavy and serious, because other people make widgets, other people do the same services. Like, what do we uniquely bring to it? And so
nobody's a magical unicorn.
I couldn't say it any better than you did. That was a great explanation of what branding is.
Well,
thank you.
Now that we know what branding is, we can take a break here. We're listening to Synapse, Think Tank of the Air with Amanda Brinkman from Deluxe, Nicole Anthony, formerly of the Site Edge, now with Disrupt, and also upcoming president at NABO. And we're here with Kelsey Lindell with Akause Cinema. And then we'll find out when we come back, what is Akause? Okay, we'll be back right after this.
Synapse, Think Tank of the Air. We'll be back in a moment.
And we're back with Synapse Think Tank of the Air. I'm Steve LeBeau. We're here with superstar, kind of a multimedia presence across the country, Amanda Brinkman from Deluxe, where she's the chief brand and communication officer, and then the star of a Small Business Revolution Main Street. Yeah, I got the name right.
That was excellent. And I like how each time you introduce me, it gets like more and more flattering.
Like Her Majesty.
By the end of this podcast. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah,
well,
that's
I like
perfect.
To bathe in your glow. How's that? And then we have Kelsey Lindell, who's with Akause. And what's Akause?
Akause is a film production company based in Minneapolis.
I thought you were going to say Moo.
Oh! That's actually how we got our name.
I know.
That's the joke behind our name.
I read about it.
Oh, shoot.
But you don't do it.
I don't. It's not my company. No, I don't do it.
Okay.
But that is how we got our name. Our founder, Tyler, was working at a bar in Madison when he was in college, and they have Spotted Cow beer.
Yep.
And
love that beer.
Yeah, we're named after that beer. So, we're a fun company. They would like play this joke on people because they would print it out on like the receipt back in the day when you'd like have the receipts hanging up and it would say Akause. And when people would order the beers and they'd see them like, what's Akause? And then they'd be like, moo.
That's good.
Tyler is the founder of our company and he's honestly the best boss I've ever had. And he is super humble and he didn't want to be Tyler Eichhorst Productions when it was just him. Like he just didn't want it, but he didn't want to think of something cheesy. But he needed to put something down when he was like, his EIN and stuff like that. So he was like, we'll just call it Akause Productions and whatever. And it just stuck. And now it's cool because our logo is a little cow. And like, once you know the story, you'll just never forget who we are. So it works.
Well, that's great branding.
Yeah, exactly.
Great branding. And now we have a joke too to go back and tell seven, 8 year olds.
There you go.
You're welcome.
It's
new joke.
Yeah. Brought to you by Akause Film and Beer.
So your name is a Wisconsin dad joke.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, true. Yeah,
true.
Good.
Yeah.
Okay, well.
It comes with a fanny pack and everything.
Oh, my gosh.
And cheese.
Does New Glarus Brewing know about this origination? Because I feel like they'd be a great client for you guys. Although they do a great job with their branding already.
But. I don't know that they do, but you are right. We should let them know that.
Yeah.
we're honored by it.
We were talking about branding a little bit earlier, and so I was wondering, Nicole, you're launching a new business, Disrupt.
Yes.
So how would you describe your brand?
My brand is being built currently. I actually meet with my copywriters on Tuesday. Photo shoot is on the 29th. Video production is in 2.5 weeks. Working on, just sent out to people who built businesses who would hire me and my team to come in and ask them, what questions would you ask me if you were considering hiring me?
That's a great
in my team.
Oh my gosh.
And so they've sent back questions. And so thinking about utilizing those ideas and answering them for copy, both in video as well as on my website and things like that. But I went with a navy blue mustard orange. I wanted it to be sophisticated and polished when you're sitting at the table and trying to go up against challenges that my team is being leveraged for. It's usually a lot of money, and it's really been very stressful for the company. And so we want them to, I want it to be very personable to me.
And articulate.
Yes, and right. Thank you. Okay. But also giving them the impression that we know what we're doing. We know who
it's always
we are.
A good impression to give.
And
yeah.
So, you know, like I have some girlfriends who own flower shops and this and that, and their brands are very soft and feminine and I don't know, just a totally different vibe. So colors, but words, all of it really does matter in its own way. And if it's not all packaged together correctly, mm-hmm. you can miss the boat, unfortunately. So branding is probably, in my opinion, one of the best investments anybody who's really interested in being in business can make. Mm-hmm.
So you're talking a lot about the manifestation of the brand, the colors and mm-hmm. designs and the videos. But then the theory, that has to come first.
Yeah, I think for me, my situation is a little bit unique. I have the education to scale companies. And then I also put together a board who's built billion-dollar businesses who actually contracts in depending on what the constraint is. And so I wanted this company to breed me and my energy, because I'm going to be the executor and the front man. But they're also in it too. So it's been kind of an interesting little thing to build out what it feels like and what it looks like. It's an energy. I feel like brands are energy, and you have an emotional reaction with them. And so it's been trying to make sure that I nail that perfectly has been... It's not easy. I will say that. It's like you said, Amanda, in the beginning. It's like you sit down and you have to have this incredibly serious conversation, and it usually happens multiple times mm-hmm. before you can really hone in, this is my energy and how it's going to breed out from my website, from my business card, from what I wear. All of the above matters.
Well, just thinking you're kind of in a very reflexive position. Because you go out, your job is to find out how to help scaling companies grow, but then you want to be a company that grows yourself.
Yes. So that's a very interesting thing to say. I don't know, per se, if I'm planning on scaling this company. I think that...
want others to scale, but you don't want to scale.
Well, so I have scaled. And I have done that, and I will scale because I am a serial entrepreneur. I actually have multiple other businesses that I want to start.
Oh, okay.
And I can't tell you any of those yet because I don't want you to steal my ideas.
You'll have to have them sign a non-disclosure.
Yeah. Okay. Can we have a whole audience of the podcast sign a non-disclosure?
I was going to say, I think the opposite of a non-disclosure is talking about the idea on a podcast.
Yeah.
Just whisper them to us.
Yeah.
Well, so I will give you, there are some really unique employee-less business concepts out there that are really fun that I'm looking into, but also manufacturing and wanting to kind of disrupt the soup industry, which is an interesting little, anyway. So there are companies that I will be scaling. This one, it's unique, and I think it takes a certain level of a certain set of skills and experience and attitude. Our values for Disrupt are enthusiasm, persistency, resourcefulness. Because when you're trying to fill 120 positions and you just expanded a new plant and these constraints are killing a company's growth, you got to get really unique and down on the pavement on Main Street and start meeting the community and doing different things to attract talent. You know, that's one of multiple constraints a current client of mine is up against. So,
I think that is interesting, though. I mean, I think everybody thinks in business that the goal is to grow. And I think things like your Shark Tanks and the Facebooks of the world, like we've seen these seemingly overnight successes where someone gets an investment and it makes us all believe that every entrepreneur wants to be the next bajillionaire, you know, and a lot of times it's not. It, for you, growth probably looks like a steady stream of clients that are profitable to your, and but being able to retain the kind of level of service and control and expertise that you want that would be difficult to scale and to find replicable in everybody that you bring on. But that growth looks different to every entrepreneur. I think it's interesting.
Well, and I think it's unique to each business, mm-hmm. right? So I call my team a board. Because they have literally built billion-dollar businesses in various industries or have and I would say that even though, you know, maybe you weren't the founder of Deluxe, but you have a very big footprint in building what Deluxe has become today, right? Mm-hmm. And Sevin, you just don't find those kind of people around on every corner. So it's I don't really feel like it's possible to scale disrupt per se. It's, it you know, it takes a certain expertise to be able to go in and do what we do. But again, it doesn't mean that other companies that I own and that other people own shouldn't scale. But I think it just matters based on whatever kind of business.
Well, I imagine a lot of the businesses that you deal with on Main Street, they're just a one-off. They don't want to scale. I mean, the one I saw was Kettle Saloon, mm-hmm. which you renamed it in, what was that, Wabash?
Wabash, Indiana. Yeah.
And they weren't out to form a whole chain of kettle that's saloons right. across yeah. the country. Yeah. They just wanted to be able to live off their own.
I think that's what's so interesting. So like in season one and season two, my co-host was Robert Hershevek from Shark Tank. And he used to always say when we would be picking the businesses that would be featured on the show and working with them, he's like, well, this isn't what small businesses look like. They all want to grow. And it's like, no, that's what you're used to on like a Shark Tank where everyone who does come on to that show truly wants to you know, get funding and grow. But this isn't that what we see on Main Street. That is what the average small business looks like in this yeah. country. Like growth to them looks like hiring another employee from that community. It looks like sponsoring the local Little League team. To them, it means being able to put braces on their second kid's teeth or not worry about their mortgage for a few months in a row.
Or send them to college.
Yeah. And so that's what I think is so beautiful about supporting small businesses. It's like, and that's why we are investing so heavily in this storytelling, because we want to inspire people to support small businesses. Because when you put a face to a business, you recognize like you're supporting a family.
Totally.
And a business that gives back disproportionately within their own community. And so we need both big business and small business for our economy to thrive. And so big business isn't the enemy of small business, but we do get to choose where we spend our dollars and as consumers.
And to that point, I went to, I got a really rare opportunity to go to Babson College for an entrepreneurial program. And our alumni releases a lot of data to us on facts. And back in 2017, they were saying that over 63% of the United States is employed by small business. Hmm. So it's like big business is great, right? But the majority of our country lives off of Main Street.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you want to talk about growing businesses, it's the small and mid-sized businesses that are growing. If you look at the large corporations, they only grow through buying another company.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
they're the ones that you see, you know, laying off 1,000 here and there.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, where's the growth?
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good point. But yeah. the idea of the formula that you use for the small business revolution, I think it's the same that you're all using when you make your a Kausei cinema vignettes. What did you call them? Their anthems?
Yeah, brand anthems. I mean, we do all kinds of things. We do campaigns and...
But
brand anthems are kind of like how we started getting on the map.
I feel like singing or putting your hand over my heart or something.
Sing.
It is funny how I never really when I listen to other people talk about other industries that I'm not in, mm-hmm. I'm like, man, they've got like quite a lexicon of like terminology. We don't have that in marketing. And then when I do sit down with other brand marketers and we're talking and we start someone using inside baseball, and they're like, anthem means something totally different somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And we do have our own lexicon of
totally,
terminology.
Totally.
So,
but it seems like the formula for all of you is the same, is that first you go to a business, you kind of analyze it, you find out what's going on, you look for the problems, and then you figure out how to solve the problems.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
And I think you have to really understand the customers. I mean, that's where I came up with the Small Biz Revolution was when I started at Deluxe. I love to go out and spend time with the customers. Whenever I started a new company, I love trying new industries. I've been in financial services, packaged goods, everything. And so I was just out spending time with these small businesses, and I was so moved by their stories. And it's like, oh my goodness, like we have to be a part of this. We have to tell people these people's stories. And I think, so the reason I do that, going out and spending time with customers, is that how can you possibly sell to someone if you don't understand what it's like to be them and to walk in their shoes? I mean, people don't make decisions just on facts and data. They are people, everyone. Even if it's a B2B business, you're making decisions based on some emotions and how you're coming into the decision. And so just, you know, in just shadowing small businesses, not only did I recognize that we had an opportunity around storytelling to help them and drive more business to them, but I also recognized that the way we were even terming things on our website made sense to us, and the way we were organized as a big company that sells websites and logos and business cards, but that's not how a small business searches for or researches how to build their own website or logos or business cards. So you really, as a marketer, it's so important to spend that kind of quality time with customers in a more qualitative, ethnographic way before you can possibly convince them or motivate a behavior.
So you're like an anthropologist.
I really believe that marketing is kind of one part psychology, anthropology, and design all coming together. And then now you have the science and data behind it that strengthen those things. But I still think as marketers, we have to not be tempted by the measurability that is now available in marketing. Mm-hmm. We still have to lead with our guts and our heads. This is still an emotional business. Absolutely. And I think we have to do a lot of work internally, especially in big companies, to explain to those that aren't in marketing that this is, yeah, there's science here now. We can measure it, but we still have, it's still art. Like there's an art and a science. So the science can just make the art more effective, but we shouldn't pursue the science in absence of the art, if that makes sense.
All right. I have a kind of a getting out of line here, just a question about Deluxe. It used to be Deluxe Checks.
Yeah.
And it's like I'm trying to think, when's the last time I wrote a check? How did they change their business model so that they don't rely on checks?
Yes. So checks are still an important part of our business and honestly fund a lot of our growth in other places. So we're really becoming much more of a tech-enabled solutions company when we look at what we do for financial services clients, a lot in the fintech space, and then what we do in order to enable small business success. So, you know, over 100 years now, we've been helping small businesses and financial institutions be successful, but you're right, that was much more in that check space and the operations of moving money, and now we're helping them with just all the other things that you need to surround your business with. So in the example of small businesses, we now help them not just operate their business and move money, but also market their business. But you're right. I mean, you know, the decline of checks has been predicted for over 20 years. It's not declining at the same rate people thought it would. So you and I might be out of the personal habit of writing checks, but checks are still generated even when we do auto bill pay, and they're still checks are still moving a lot of money in this country.
I actually just wrote a check the other day.
And really? Do you kind of forget how to do it?
Oh my gosh, yeah, and then I'm like half cursive, half like normal writing. I'm like, crap.
I've never owned my own checkbook.
Well, wow. There you go.
Gosh, are you a millennial or are you one of the Z's?
27. I don't know what that means.
But oh, you're a millennial. You're a millennial.
Yeah.
What I think is what I miss about writing checks is the register. So my husband and I still have quite a few financial habits of like, you know, you're talking about the deductions. I think too many Americans, or probably a global trend, people don't know what they have in their bank account. And so what using a checkbook used to force us kind of to do is to write down, you know, deposits and the withdrawals on a regular basis.
But then you had to learn subtraction.
Yeah. Well, so we still do that with our debit card. So we're, I don't know if that makes us nerdy or just really fiscally responsible, but when we're using our debit card, we still use that check register. So we are always aware of what's coming in and out. And anyway.
I'll get into the details. Your CFO would be so proud of you.
I think so. I should tell him this.
You will get a gold star on your next, yeah.
It's interesting, though, because I think I was just talking to someone the other day about like why businesses don't make braver decisions. And I think it actually has – that's kind of a heavy thing to all of a sudden just lob here into our discussion. But I think it actually has to do with what we're talking about, which is like – people are so afraid of losing their jobs because as Americans, we spend the max. We spend what we make and what our partners make. We, as soon as we get a raise, we raise our spending up to that same level and we're never
I'll get the better wine.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so then suddenly what happens is these great jobs that we have are trapping us. Yep. And then so people don't want to make brave decisions. They don't want to stand out. They don't want to go up against someone because out of like kind of like fear. I mean, it's just a theory I have.
Yeah.
And I'm holding up my hands. You can't see it on the podcast. They
but don't, like, they don't want to
be a different reason. But
they don't want to change.
Yeah.
That's the big problem, I think, around the world is people are afraid of change and then other people pushing for it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It sounds like politics.
It does.
Gosh.
We need more bravery. We need more courage. To do the right thing, to say the right thing, to push back when someone's not.
We need economic heroes.
Yeah, yeah.
I wanted to write a book at one point, going through a bunch of transition that I have in the last year and a half, and it was called A Day in the Life as a Millennial, because technically I'm a millennial, but I'm older generation millennial.
Yeah.
I grew up with a 4,000-pound TV, and I had a Nokia when I was, like, 17. But it was going to be called A Day in the Life as a Millennial, Surviving American Cultures, Labels, and it was really good. But it kind of just reminds me of that as like people get so fearful in the United States of just being who they are, making the decisions that they needed to. I just went through a divorce, and that comes with its own set of labels and stigma and all that kind of stuff. And
so you're going to be a serial marrier too.
Serial marrier, serial entrepreneur, whatever. Yeah, sure. But yeah, I mean, sometimes I think in this country, it's really hard to make the right decisions for yourself because of the stigma and the labels and the judgment that goes around. Mm-hmm. And it's really sad because life is so good and you should be able to make those changes. And people grow apart, people change, and like there needs to be more room in America for change. Like people evolve, and it's okay. That's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't always have to be bad. So my divorce was actually a really good thing, and he's wonderful, and he's doing great, and I'm doing great, and you know, it doesn't have to always be bad.
So he's not on your board?
He's not on my board, though. Okay. No.
Well, congratulations on the divorce. Like, I think good for you for being brave. Life is too short to not pursue relationships and environments that make you the best version of yourself.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well said. Yeah.
Life is too short, and our program is too short too. We're going to take a brief break here and come back to the life and times of Nicole Anthony.
No.
Synapse, Think Tank of the Air. We'll be back in a moment.
And we're back on Synapse, Think Tank of the Air. I'm Steve LeBeau. We're here with people that know more about marketing than I ever even imagined existed. We're here with Amanda Brickman from Deluxe. She's the Chief Brand and Communications Officer, and kind of you help small businesses on Main Street throughout the country market better.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Is that the way to put it? And we're here with Kelsey Lindell with A Cow Say Cinema, and you help companies discover the brands, and also you make like little video commercials. Is that what you do?
We do all kinds of things. So we've done TV series before. We do brand anthems. We do marketing campaigns. Our motto is stories about people, so it's a very large realm of what we can do. We're a six-person team, but they're so bomb at what they do. I know nothing. I joined because I was like, a 30-second video sent me to South Africa for 4 years. I've always
really
wanted to do this. Please teach me how. And we got together and had a couple conversations. Like, well, I think you should maybe work in like development for us and like partnerships, and I was like, okay. So here we go.
Well, cinema, do they do any like?
Yeah, they do commercials,
comedy series, or
no, not
films,
we,
or
we could. We definitely could. We just haven't yet. We do. It is mostly commercials and brand anthems right now.
But I mean, you're with Amanda. Don't you want to do something that could go on Hulu?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We do. Actually, right now, what we just launched, and so they brought me on to do kind of like brand partnerships with their clients and like development for them. And I was going through their business plan, and there's this thing in there, and it said that one of their goals was to give away $1 million in free film work to tell stories that matter.
Hey.
Like, what the heck? I don't know if I can swear, but I swore. Like, what the swear word? And I was like, why are we not talking about this? Like, this is so cool. And they're like, you can talk about it. And so we're talking about it now. And so last week we launched a campaign. It's called Inspired by Story. And basically Tyler, the founder, his whole thing was like, I mean, kind of like you're talking about, like, brave people. Like, if you see one person being brave and doing something really cool, it's going to inspire you to do something. Mm-hmm. So if you know somebody that's doing something really cool, chances are that person was inspired by somebody else. Mm-hmm. And so how do we tell those stories? Because we, as filmmakers, I mean, I'm not a filmmaker, they're a filmmaker, but I'm part of the team. As filmmakers, we have a responsibility to tell stories that matter. Like, we have the opportunity to give the microphone to things and issues that we want to see projected in the light that we want them projected in, which is like quality, fairness, empathy, kindness. Like, we want to push that out there. And I mean, as a small business, like, we're good at what we do, but we also have slow seasons. We're like, why don't we use those slow seasons to tell stories that matter? Like, why not? Mm. And so I just think that it's so cool that, like, it was something that they weren't talking about. So it wasn't like Tyler was like, what can we do? Like, it was just like this little line in their business plan. And I was like, we need to do this, because, like, also the things that we win local Emmys for are, like, the stories that matter. That's what we're good at.
Can you give me
an
example?
You like how she just, like, tossed out the Emmy there? Like, it was just, like, yeah. A passing thought. Like, oh, just a passing reference.
Oh, maybe have you heard of it, Emmy?
They're good at what they do. They are. It's They're amazing. Very good at it.
Is that the statuette in your purse there?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, here. Oh, but yeah, I'm just... Yeah. You know, actually, my Emmy out of the way.
So they... Tyler, the founder, his fiance works for Acausse as well, and they have a dog, and their dog's name is Emery, and they got the dog before they won anything, and they were already calling him Emmy. And so now people come in, and they're like, you named your dog an Emmy? And they're like, no, his name is Emery. It's Emery the Brave on Instagram. Like, we swear we're not those people, but...
Can you give me an example of one of the pieces you made just for the good of it?
Yeah, sure. So oh my goodness... First name is Alan. I'm blanking on his last name right now, but he's known as the Sandwich Man around Minneapolis. I don't know if you guys have heard of him. Mm-hmm. Every single night he goes out and he just hands out hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of sandwiches. And those are the kind of stories we want to tell. So we launched this thing, and I think a lot of people are like, oh, well, I'm not that inspiring, or these people I know aren't that inspiring. Like, we don't go out 365 nights a year and give out hundreds of sandwiches. Which is true. I don't do that. So I get that. I get that feeling of like, oh, maybe my thing isn't good enough. But we really like telling those stories that just, like, wouldn't get told otherwise. It could be the woman in your neighborhood who always makes sure that, like, when the kids come home from school, their parents are there and she, like, helps them with their homework. It could be something as simple as that, because those kind of things are like, we can't all be the Sandwich Man. So that's a cool story that we've done. And we worked with, like, a couple different other media outlets that, like, ended up telling a story. And then it got really publicized. So it got, like, he didn't even ask for this free film work. We heard of him through some people. And then also we got different, like, companies to donate food. So that night that we, like, told his story, that people got on board. And he handed out, like, I think the most, like, thousands of sandwiches that night to help, like, homeless people in Minneapolis.
I think that can be the title of your book. We Can't All Be the Sandwich Man.
The journalist in me is coming out. That's a great title.
Yeah. Yeah.
I actually really love, just from my perspective, just listening to this, like, one of the things that really stood out to me is how you started this conversation out earlier that you absolutely love and adore your boss. And I love how transparent he was with his team, because had he not shown his team his business plan, which I would say very few leadership people do, this would not be transpiring right now. Mm-hmm. And so there's this really great book called, I think it's called Motivators. And you learn, once you read the book, you find out if you're a motivator or a diminisher as a leader.
And it sounds like motivator would be the one you want to be,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So a motivator is somebody who is very transparent like that, who empowers their team to go out and make the decisions and really taps into their value. And I just can see, just even as you're talking, like, he's definitely a motivator. Oh my gosh. But it just seems like it.
Truly,
so that's awesome.
We had our first, I only joined the team like, you know, spring of 2019, and it was like truly like, they didn't even ask me for my resume. We just like talked and shared core values, and I knew people in the industry, and like a good friend of mine used to have a job very similar to mine with them, so like they know it's a good fit and I have the skill set to do it. And it was just all about like culture and who fits with us and who doesn't. And I think it's so important because like yesterday we had our first one-on-one since I've been there, and he had it with everyone. Like it wasn't like I did anything wrong or anything like that. And I couldn't sleep the night before because I had so many bosses in the past that are that like, you have 25,000 Instagram followers, you posted one thing, why don't we have 10 new clients? I'm like, what? Like, you just don't understand it. And I just felt like after I meet, I was so nervous because like, you never know. Like, what if there's, you know, cross wires? And I just left feeling like more in love with my job than ever before. And then like, he's truly the best boss and guy. And not, Tyler, listen to this. You are a great guy. You're not the best guy. My fiance is the best guy. But I can't I can't say that because Mac will hear this. So, yeah. But you're great. Like a very close second. So,
right, congratulations awesome. On your upcoming
Thank
wedding. That's very exciting.
Yes. Well, we're having all kinds of announcements
we
here.
We really are, yeah. Steve. Yes.
Yeah. Well, so Kelsey, you're working for entrepreneurs. Have you ever thought of being one yourself, or have you been in the past?
Yeah, so I started a nonprofit.
And it failed.
Yeah, which is something that I was really ashamed to talk about for a while because I came back from South Africa, and so super spark notes on my story is I'm missing half my arm, and my parents always coached me when I was like a kid. Like I would get up on the first day of school, I'm like, hi, I'm Kelsey, I'm missing half my arm, this is why it is that way, any questions? Because they were like, if you can get it out there, you'll get teased way less, and I still got teased this fair amount, so I'm glad we did it because who knows
what a bunch of little shitheads.
Oh, yeah.
What is wrong with people?
Kids are dicks.
Yeah.
I love kids. I've always been able to communicate this stuff with kids. And when I went to South Africa, I was working with kids that had been removed from previously abusive homes. And, I mean, I was the idiot 18-year-old, so I didn't know anything about anything. But these kids, they'd, like, pull on my, like, so I'm missing half my arm, but I still have a couple of fingers on my left hand for people that can't see. It's just shorter. And these kids would be like, Teacher Kelsey, what happened to your arm? And I was like, no, I was born like that. And they're like, oh, but did the lion eat it? And I was like, no, the lion didn't eat it. I was born like that. And they're like, oh, but did the shark eat it? I was like, no, the shark didn't eat it. And like, oh, but someone cut it off. And I was like, no, I was born that way. And I thought it was just because of these kids' upbringing that they were like, you know, they'd been removed from traumatic homes. So they just, you know, were taking it out on me.
Wanted a good story.
Yeah, they wanted a good story. And I couldn't give it to them. They were bummed. But I actually found out that if I had been born in Cape Town, South Africa, there's a 70% chance I never would have gone to kindergarten, and a 90% chance I never would have finished high school.
Because they thought you were too disabled to learn?
Yeah, so a lot of times, there's a couple of different things going on. A lot of stigma, not just in Cape Town, but like across the world, and even in parts of America, a lot of people view disability as if someone has something that's physically different about them, there's something cognitively different as well. And
that's bananas!
Yeah. Well, yeah, absolutely. But we're also educated, like really well educated. Like we are the, poorest person in this country is still in the top 1% of the world. So you have, like, these people have, like, they've never had the opportunities. They haven't been exposed to it. And then they also have, like, witch doctors in their communities that are telling them. That's another thing is, like, there's an 80% mortality rate of kids with disabilities dying under the age of 5, which is crazy because they'll just be thrown away. Because the witch doctor will say, well, this person, someone in your family sinned, which causes this kid to be that way. And if they don't throw the kid away, their whole family will be ostracized. So it's, like, this huge genocide that's going on. I need to stop talking about this because I'm super passionate about it and it's a completely different topic. But I came back to start a nonprofit raising awareness on these issues. And at the same time, like, startups don't make a ton of money, especially when you're 23 years old. They really don't if they're a nonprofit because you're not trying to make money. You're trying to help people. You're trying to raise awareness. So I needed another job. And so I always liked fitness. I was a dancer growing up, so I became a fitness teacher and taught yoga, taught fitness classes. And as I was trying to raise awareness and do, like, best practices for communication on these really heavy issues that I was trying to communicate, I was also building a yoga career, fitness career. And nobody cared about the kids. Everyone was like, cool, that's cool. When can I come to your class? I want to get a six-pack. And I was like, are you kidding me? Like, this is ridiculous. There's kids that are dying. So finally, I was like, fine, bait and switch. We're having a yoga charity event. And if you want to come, we're having funds raised and you're going to pay and it's going to go to these nonprofits. And so that's kind of like, we slowly transitioned. It wasn't like it failed and people were laid off. We just couldn't really get, it was failure to launch. I mean, I launched it like I got the like EIN or whatever.
So you wanted to raise awareness and people were too oblivious.
Yeah, I think it's like a combination of things. Like you said, it's the psychology of things. And like thinking about really heavy things like that is really hard for people.
Well, you wonder what you can do. And I think that you hear it and you're like, I have to do something about it. But so many people feel powerless to do it. Yeah. And so you need nonprofits to be the arms and legs to do it. No pun intended. Like, but you need to actually be able to go out and like and do the work. But people want to put their support behind it. But I almost think, from the outside, listening to you, like, you're in the perfect place now.
Yeah, exactly.
At a Cal State. Like, I think 100%. The next thing they do should be working with you to make a video about how we change this and where can those kids go instead of being
totally
thrown away and not in their family. And then also, how do we help those witch doctors? I mean, every religion really has this, like, generational, you know, bias. I mean, we have it here in this country around absolutely people blaming Christianity for why you shouldn't treat people from the LGBTQ plus community the right way. Like, right? Well, that is something that people use religion or their interpretation of the Bible to
all these literalists. For.
Yeah, and it's like, so, but I mean, it's just like, I don't know. I think that I feel like you were meant to be exactly where you are right now with your perspective, with the way you were blessed to be born.
Yeah.
Like, I think, like I feel like your arm is weighted is because God wants you to, like,
absolutely
use that to help other kids who are not in a position to do. I mean, it's just, it's like such a, I don't know, I'm going to start crying. I feel like you were so blessed to have this heart, to have this special ability to be able to, like, save children. You're going to save kids. What the heck have we done?
Start large companies that, like, really are important.
Advocates kids are the future. Like, that's, I bet.
I agree.
It'll be fun to see what you end up doing with it. I think you had to you used the word fail, but I don't think that was it. You just have new data and more data around what to do next at the next run of it.
I don't think failure is a dirty word. Like, I think, like, I think we failed the launch, and I think I was so like, I did not touch anything nonprofit for a while, and I was just like in marketing for fitness stuff because I was like, well, I can raise funds for this, but I can't do that because I was so scared. And especially when I put, like, it was so interwoven in my identity with who I was, because I 100% agree. When I was little, my parents, like, you know, I'd be like, why was I born this way? Because I got teased a lot. And they're like, you know, honey, we don't know why. One day we'll know. We don't know. But you're just you. And when I met these kids, especially because, like, I worked for, like, with 4 years with this organization at a school, empowering and hiring local people to teach these kids and work with them. But all these kids had disabilities. And it just, like, we just connected like crazy. Like, it was insane. And it just made sense. Like, oh, this is why I was born this way. Like, this makes complete sense. And then to feel like that had failed in a way was super hard. But now, like, and finally, I just took a year off from marketing. And I was like, I just need to connect with kids because, like, I can't sell things that don't matter. And then, you know, I saw Danny, one of our producers, had gotten the 32 Under 32 Award. And he had, like, said something about a class. We were, like, following each other. And, like, hey, is the Kelsey hiring? I'd even intern for you, even though it's, like, I just want to learn how to do. He's like, well, let's just talk. And then we just talked about this exact same stuff. And I was like, I just want to change. He's like, that's kind of how we all feel. And then, the rest is history. So.
It sounds like you found your brand.
No, it's, I've got the coolest job in the world.
Wow. Boy, so much going on here. I just wanted to ask, we just have a couple of minutes left. But Nicole, your children will be all these companies that you'll be overseeing, the women business owners in the Twin Cities, as you assume the presidency of NABO. What are the big challenges these days for women-owned companies or to get them launched or scaled or just even sustained?
Wow, that is a very loaded question.
We have 90 seconds.
plenty of time.
Great,
you know, women can now go get credit. You know,
without their husbands.
Without their husbands, as of 1986 or something like that.
Boy, so time flies.
It hasn't even been that long for women to actually be able to start their own businesses and be able to have access to capital. That's why our partnership, we're in partnership with the WBDC as well, and what they're doing and trying to get certified and stuff. So there are programs and organizations that are out there now, and all of us are really, what's really beautiful is we're all kind of coming together and we're fundraising together. I think we've got dual sponsorships because we're of our partnership, which was just super cool. Something just went through. I can't remember if it was Cargill or something else. But it's just, there are a lot of challenges. I would say, you know, women-owned businesses are make up maybe 7% of businesses in the United States.
Is that all?
I think that's me being generous.
But see, women are like what percent of the population?
Oh, I know we're over. I think there are more women than there are men in the at least in the United States. I don't know those numbers.
So the ownership is disproportional.
So very, and again, you know, we've had, you know, things that held us back, or women. Not I speak for us as a. I just experienced it though, right? So that's one of the things is like, this is why women who've been pioneering the way all along, it's so important to remember them and be grateful for them, because now today I am, I just turned 34 and I don't have to deal with that. I can walk into Bank of America and get a line of credit, and I've taken good care of my credit because I was taught how to do that. And those things were not always in place. And it's just, it's going to take time, I think, for it to catch up to where it needs to be. I will say, though, it's hilarious that I'm becoming the president of a women-only organization, because I actually am a true advocate of eliminating the girls' club and the boys' club and all of us coming together as entrepreneurs and as employees. We couldn't build companies without you. And you guys wouldn't be able to do what you do best without us. It's a great, it's so important.
Yeah.
And it's what makes the world go around. And again, just, I think it's super important that at some point, men and women need to come together more and more and more. I mean, the majority of my clients are men. I love men. They're great. They're fun. They're smart. They teach me all sorts of stuff. And I'm grateful for them. The women are great too. And so I think the more advocacy that we can get behind, we're all equals, we're all entrepreneurs, we're all brilliant in our own way, we all have talents, we're all, you know, the sooner those challenges will be defeated.
I know what you mean, because like I sometimes like if I'll be posting something, I'll be like hashtag lady boss, and I'll be like, okay, backspace, just hashtag boss. Like, why do I say the lady part? Like, but yet at the same time, I still feel like we are in kind of this momentum, this time of momentum where I think women are recognizing the importance of supporting other women. Like, as female leaders, we talk about this a lot, that it's not always men that have held us back. It's actually been other women and this queen bee theory, and there's all these different reasons for it. But, so I'm with you. Like, I feel like we could probably start dropping the women in business awards and things like that, but maybe not quite yet. I don't know. I think we're in this transition time, but I think the goal is it should just be hashtag boss. Like,
that's
the future,
just my
you
vision.
Know?
So I agree with you, and I don't know what that looks like. I think you're dead on with that.
Okay,
I'm a boss.
There's certainly no shortage of talented women, and that's kind of the point of this podcast here. We have, thank you so much for being here, Amanda Brinkman from Deluxe. I'll look for your show.
Woo-hoo. Yep.
Small Business Revolution Main Street.
Yep.
What city's next?
Season 4 will be launching on October 8th, and that is Searcy, Arkansas. And then we'll be opening up nominations for Season 5, so people can nominate their favorite small town at smallbusinessrevolution.org.
Okay, I'm still crying that Red Wing didn't make it. So, also, thank you for being here, Kelsey Lindell from Akause Cinema.
Yes.
Good luck on all your, you know, you need more passion. That's all I would say to you.
I do need more stories, so go nominate a story for a free film.
Okay, you're just too laid back and introverted. And then Nicole Anthony, thank you so much. Good luck on all of your new moves here, your new company, your new presidency, and your new life.
I have a new life.
It's
a good.
There's so many seasons to life. I think that's the secret to it. It's like embracing every season and that constant evolution of who a person is. It's cool.
Yeah. Okay, our season is ending right now. But
thank you
for joining us. Obviously, we can go on for another hour or so. I'm Steve LeBeau, and I'd also like to thank Dan Culhane, our producer, and to mention that this is a co-production with WCCO Radio. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Synapse. Think Tank of the Air. I'm Leo Espinosa.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.